Mr. Goodman, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Kunta Torrance died suddenly, violently, and while fleeing from the police in a car crash. But imagine for the moment that he had died of a disease while surrounded by his loved ones in his own bed, but that prior to his death, he had assigned his life insurance proceeds to Jackman Financial Corporation, perhaps to prepay for his funeral, or perhaps just to take his children to Disney World before he died. If that was the case, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't get to Humana's ideas about facility of payment clauses. They would never come into play because there would be no dispute that there would be a valid assignment, assuming Jackman had properly notified Humana and so forth. Jackman would have given Humana the assignment. The policy proceeds would be Jackman's. It's Jackman's position that what happened here is identical, and that there is no need to be distracted by Humana's invitation to look at the facility of payment clause. It never comes into play. Here we had, a few days after Mr. Torrance's death, his mother, the executor of his, or the proto-executor of his estate, entered into the assignment, and the assignment was tendered by Jackman to Humana. And the... So then we look, turn to the second argument that Humana is making, which is that it doesn't count because it was done 2 days too early. I believe.
You know, before you go even one moment more, just tell me this. What effect, if any, does your client's recent bankruptcy filing have on us?
I don't believe that it has any effect on the main appeal. Arguably, were you to reject our appeal and by what I we've suggested in the briefs is Humana's unlikely, if not implausible, invitation to sanction us, arguably before those sanctions could take place, the stay would have to be lifted. But Jackman is proceeding under Chapter 11 in the Northern District of Illinois as a debtor in possession. An application to retain me as well as the other lawyers who are representing Jackman in other litigation post-petition is or will be filed. I'm not representing them in the bankruptcy and, in fact, was not informed of it until after it was filed. But I don't believe that the bankruptcy has any effect on the appeal with the possible exception of the sanctions request. We, of course, notified the court as soon as we learned of it because the court might disagree and you had the prerogative to perhaps delay the argument had you seen fit.
But let's get back to this. I know you want to make this facility of payment clause disappear, but it's a reality in this case, and there were options that Humana had been given. So, I mean, I need you to tell me why Humana was required to give the benefits to Ms. Kelly or his estate.
Okay. At the time Humana claims to have exercised its discretion pursuant to the facility payment clause, it was a number of months after that discretion had been taken away from them. And that discretion was taken away from them by the valid assignment. Ms. Kelly, in her capacity as executor, assigned the benefits to Humana. And assigned the Humana benefits to Jackman. And
so the fact that a plan states that the payment will be made at our option to any one or more of the following, what, that disappeared? Our option?
The Humana abused its discretion by invoking that because one never got to that point. The reason why one never got to that point is because there was a valid assignment on the part of Ms. Kelly as executor to Jackman, and Humana was informed of that assignment. And
the problem with that argument is that it assumes that the benefits would go into the estate, and that runs contrary to the clause in the policy, which says that it's up to Humana to decide whom to pay.
That's correct, but temporally we never get to that point because what Ms. Kelly did several days after Mr. Torrance's death is no different than what Mr. Torrance could have done during his lifetime.
But did not.
That's correct. He did not.
Did not.
That's correct.
I don't know what he could have done.
But had Mr. Torrens, during his lifetime, assigned the benefits to Jackman to prepay for his funeral, then we would have never gotten to the point where Humana would have had the opportunity to apply the Facility of Payments Clause. And the exact same thing happened here under North Carolina law, because under Graves versus Wellborn, the North Carolina Supreme Court decision, and under North Carolina statute, the insurance policy and the insurance policy proceeds were property of the estate, and therefore Ms. Kelly, as the executor of the estate, had the right to marshal the estate's assets by pledging those policy proceeds to Jackman to pay for the funeral. And Humana knew that this had happened in this particular instance because it was given the paperwork in April of 2007, and it did not invoke the Facility of Payment Clause until sometime in the late summer, early fall of 2007.
How much are we fighting about?
The base amount is approximately $10,600. This lawsuit was filed by Jackman in the municipal division on the 11th floor of the Daily Center and removed by Humana, as is its right, to this court, to the Northern District, based on ERISA preemption. Jackman acquiesced to that removal because, again, $10,600, not we didn't perceive
but
it was worth fighting about.
It's all the other cases that are going to come down the pipe.
That's part of it. Jackman is a repeat player, as one might imagine, in this type of litigation. And for better or worse, when the litigation stays in the municipal division, these cases are decided in a bench trial of a few minutes. But when they're removed to United States District Court, we then have the cross motions for summary judgment, cross motions for summary judgment based upon ERISA preemption and all the attendant expenses. But We've invoked all sorts of reasons why an executor can and should act before her formal appointment if necessary. And North Carolina law, and I believe the law of all 50 states, is quite clear that the conduct of an executor is retroactively blessed by her appointment. This court has previously recognized in Cannon versus Edgar, as noted on
retroactively blessed? So if the executor is a person who with criminal intent and does criminal acts, it would be blessed? What are we talking about?
There's the probate court still has the right to supervise or act, just like a bankruptcy court has the right with regard to a bankruptcy trustee. A probate court still has the right to remove or countermand something an executor does that's improper. But temporally, Humana makes much of the fact that Ms. Kelly signed the paperwork on April 11th and wasn't actually appointed the executor until April 13th. That doesn't matter because North Carolina statute, North Carolina common law, religious tradition, and common sense all indicate that what an executor does in the few days prior to the formal confirmation of his or her appointment is retroactively blessed if the appointment is made.
Now, when she assuming that she properly became executor, she was the executor of the estate, right?
Of her son's estate,
yeah, of
yes.
Of her son's estate.
Right.
Which is number 5 in that list. So even if you're right that she's the executor, that's the 5th option. So
there's two reasons why that doesn't matter. First of all, it's not clear that the list is a pecking order. But more importantly, we never get
to
a list with numbers next to it isn't a pecking order.
It doesn't say that, but more importantly, we never get to the list. And the reason why we never get to the list is Humana is invoking the list at some point after August 22nd, 2007, when it gets the affidavit.
There are no time limits or anything. It's not like it has.
I understand that.
In fact, Humana's got everything. They got the claim of the grandchildren. They have the claim of the mother, you know, saying she's executor. So they have the whole picture. This isn't you see what I'm saying? They've got the whole picture.
I understand exactly what you're saying. And if anything, I think that supports us because Humana accepted a second set of contradictory instructions from Ms. Kelly, knowing full well that Jackman had relied upon the first set of instructions to its financial detriment. But the reason why, and I see I'm running into the danger zone on time, but the reason why it doesn't matter, the Facility of Payment Clause doesn't matter is because we never get to that point. Humana's discretion is circumscribed. It's limbed by the fact that there's a valid assignment 4, 5, 6 months earlier. And common sense and religious tradition suggest that people are buried shortly after they die and that we cannot wait. And Humana knows that this is going on. The purpose of these small dollar life insurance policies, the policy in this instance was $15,000, can't possibly be to provide substantial income replacement in the way that a 6 or 7 figure life insurance policy would be. The purpose of this life insurance policy, the reason why these ERISA plans are marketed, is to give funeral benefits to the employees of these companies. And therefore, we don't get to the facility of payment clause because it was no longer Humana's decision to make. The policy and the policy proceeds became property of Mr. Torrance's estate at the instant of his death. And as a result...
Okay. All right. As a result, finish your...
She had the right, Ms. Kelly, as the executor, had the right to assign it to Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Okay. Okay. Mr. Milner.
Yes, Your Honor.
Come on up.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Morgan Milner, and I represent Humana Insurance Company in this appeal.
Okay, so Jackman makes an interesting argument. Most people must make their funeral arrangements before an executor or administrative in a state can be, appointed. Isn't that, that's why we have that rule that an executor's appointment relates back to the instant of death. Validates whatever the executor does in the interval between death and the appointment. Well, between what Kelly, all right, anything that Kelly did. Right? Wrong?
Oftentimes right. I don't think the Graves case, Your Honor, necessarily stands for the proposition that in all instances the activity will relate back. That case dealt with a very specific fact scenario. It was a wrongful death. The administrator had brought the cause of action before she was appointed, and it was a very harsh rule that, she wouldn't have standing simply because she'd been appointed at a later time. This situation is a bit different. It's a case where she was assigning a death benefit that, frankly, and more importantly, she never had. I think that's the crux of the matter.
Your argument depend on the timing of the appointment and the assignment? I thought your position was even if she'd already been appointed executor, the proceeds were not hers to assign.
That's right, Your Honor. That is our position.
So this issue about sequence really doesn't matter all that much.
No. We certainly raised it. We argued it. We stand by it. But at the end of the day, it's irrelevant.
Can you answer the question of to whom does Humana contend that the policy belonged after Quinta Torrance died, if not to his estate? Who did it belong to?
It's an employee benefit plan, so it would be, to the extent there's a policy holder, the plan's policy holder is the employer. This is not a traditional individual term life insurance product where there's an owner, and typically that's the insured and beneficiaries. This is a group benefit under ERISA. It provides death benefits. In this case, not only was there the $15,000 life benefit, but there was $15,000 accidental death and disability. And so there's no... Certainly, Mr. Torrance had an interest.
Are you saying it was a $30,000 policy?
There was two benefits.
Get $30,000?
Yes, Your Honor.
Oh, okay.
What I'm trying to say is that the policyholder is the employer. Mr. Torrance doesn't have, in a sense, he does have some sort of interest in the benefit, but it's his employer's plan. He benefits.
It's like all the rest of ERISA. No one can figure it out.
Well, and even though the employer, quote, owned the policy, did he have any right to change those terms, that is, those five identified parties?
Well, certainly.
But that never happened.
No, he certainly could have named a secondary beneficiary in addition to the primary beneficiary. That just wasn't the case. And the primary beneficiary, regrettably, happened to be his brother, who died along with him in the car accident. So to answer your question, he could have named an additional contingent beneficiary, but to the extent he can't change the terms of the plan, that provision, that facility of payment clause, is inserted there for just this type of situation where, oh, there is no primary, perhaps they forgot to name them, perhaps they predeceased. Therefore, the insurer, or in this case the claim administrator, or also an insurance company, had the option of paying any of those people, as the term suggests, to facilitate payment.
Why do you write a policy like this? We've got the First Circuit case where the insurance company is trying to get out from under the discretion that the policy gave it, right?
That's right. I think that was – it was a curious curious case. Perhaps the insurer in that case, because they were faced right off the bat with litigation, perhaps they decided, well, we'll rush in and interplead. But perhaps not the purpose from the very beginning of facility payment clauses, but now one advantage of them is that insurers can avoid – interpleader-type situations. It gives them just an unbridled discretion to select a beneficiary. So I think Forcier is important, certainly, in that the court discussed the facility of payment clauses, that they're the benefit for insurers, et cetera. But I think maybe, to be more specific in answering your question, the insurer went in just maybe they were faced with litigation immediately, as opposed to putative claims or threatened litigation.
One of us has to say something.
You want to rest on your briefs, that's fine too.
Well,
that's an option.
Just to wrap up, a facility of payment clause in its simplest form, it's an appointment from an insured to an insurer to select a beneficiary, and they provide this wide discretion in order to facilitate payment. And a couple things I'd like to highlight for the court is that certainly these clauses existed long before ERISA, but they really benefit the ERISA system. ERISA is designed in part. I understand your comment earlier about the complexities of ERISA.
What? You should have sat down.
Don't say too much.
In any event, they certainly make the system less complex. They provide an easy method of payment, and it benefits the courts as well. If insurers feel confident that they can rely on the facility of payment clause, perhaps they will be less likely, as the insurer did in 4CA, to rush in and interplead, and they can feel confident in simply paying a beneficiary under the plan and being done with it.
Thank you, Mr. Milner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm going to give you two more minutes, Mr. Cookman.
With all respect, I would suggest that Mr. Milner's claim that the policy proceeds belong to the employer in the interval between Mr. Torrance's death in April and whenever the proceeds were paid to the grandchildren in late 2007 is far-fetched.
I think his position was that the policy was owned by the employer, not that the employer had a right to the proceeds.
I don't think there's any dispute that there's a master certificate under which each of the dozens, hundreds, thousands of employers of this Friedrich Foods has a discrete right to give money to a beneficiary in the event of his or her death while an employee. But the policy, there's no dispute that the master policy may belong to the employer, but the certificate belongs to each employee. And the fact remains that the policy proceeds themselves don't belong to the employer. They belong to the estate. In the gap between when Mr. Torrance died and when Humana pays them to whomever, those policy proceeds belong to the estate. And therefore, Ms. Kelly, as the executor of the estate, had the right to pledge those policy proceeds to Jackman to pay for Mr. Torrance's funeral. Mr. Milner also suggested that it was actually a $30,000 policy. I don't think that's correct. I think but whether it was a $15,000 policy or a $30,000 policy, there's an objectively correct answer to that, and it's either in the record or it's not in the record. And if the court is curious, we can point you to that or supplement. But given that the policy proceeds belong to the estate, given that Jackman told Humana about the assignment that it had obtained from Ms. Kelly, I would suggest to the court that Humana abused its discretion by relying on a contrary set of instructions from the same person, right? In April, Nancy Kelly tells Humana to pay Jackman. In August, Nancy Kelly tells Humana to pay her grandchildren. And I would suggest to the court that that is an abuse of discretion and that there's no need to reach the facility payment issue.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. And the case is going to be taken under advisement, and we come